Welcome to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. Today we're going to be talking about fake plastic trees. Now, you could take this one of two ways, right? You could literally be talking about the little ficus trees that sit in the corner of a horrible office or whatever, which, yeah, those are fake plastic trees. But we're actually going to be focusing on the song by Radiohead entitled Fake Plastic Trees.
Now, before we get into the meat of this song today,
is it the real meat or the fake meat?
It's that new vegetable meat they're trying to force everybody to eat at the moment.
Like a Boca burger?
Well, yeah, it's kind of trampled grass, and they say it tastes like steak, and if you disagree, then you're a murderer or something like that,
yeah.
I think. A murderer of the environment, because it's not because of animal cruelty and, you know, the killing of cows, which I didn't realize they did to make steak. I just thought they cut off the excess kind of meat on cows and it kept growing back. But apparently it's because there are too many cows, they produce too much methane, and it affects the environment. So that's why they want us all to eat artificial meat. It's got nothing to do with anti-animal cruelty. It's because of farts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, but that really wasn't where I was going to go with it. But,
oh, well, you know. Where were you going?
Well, I'd like to give a couple of shout-outs today, actually. First of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to CVS. I know they don't sponsor us, but my girlfriend works for them. The truth is, they are so much better than Walgreens, because I can't take Walgreens seriously. Have you seen the length of their receipt compared to CVS? CVS, you're guaranteed like a 12-foot receipt if you buy a Snickers bar, but Walgreens do this stupid thing where it's literally only got the items you've just purchased on there. And I don't think you can be taken seriously as an over-the-counter pharmacy distribution store if you don't have a long-ass receipt.
I actually don't get a receipt from Walgreens anymore, because I was told by my wife that she has this, like, Walgreens customer appreciation account or whatever, and now it's one of those apps that's in my Apple phone wallet, and I don't even get a receipt anymore.
So you don't even get a digital receipt?
No, she does to her email, so I never see the receipt anymore. So I never get a receipt at Walgreens anymore. But I did buy something from CVS. I bought one item, and I'm pretty sure the receipt was like 4 foot long.
Yeah, there's like trees crying as you kind of walk past them while you're carrying your CVS receipt. Because the ironic thing is, whoever their landscape gardener is outside the CVS closest to where I live, they've planted a bunch of trees around the parking lot. I'm assuming part of that was to provide shade for the people who park there and use the CVS, but I think it's just to mock the trees when people walk out with these long receipts, which you're having to wrap around their arm like about 9 times just to be able to carry it without tripping over it.
But I also wonder if there are Native Americans standing outside of a CVS and people are dropping these huge receipts down on the ground and they're crying because of all the littering that's happening with that.
Yeah, I don't think we have much of a problem with that in DFW. Actually, the Native Americans crying about the use of recycled paper for receipts. But anyway, shout out CVS. Love you. Love the receipts. Walgreens, you got up your game, because nobody's going to take you seriously until you sort this inadequacy in the receipt department.
But as long as we're talking about them, we do not have an official pharmacy sponsor, and apparently there's really only two left, Walgreens or CVS, so we would love for y'all to battle
it out. I'm not sure if I want Walgreens to sponsor us. I think I just want CVS. I'm holding out CVS, to be honest with you.
Well, which one has the better beer prices?
You know, I don't know if I've ever bought beer in.
No, they both serve beer. Now, one of them got rid of cigarettes, which, you know, you and I don't smoke cigarettes, but I know one of them got rid of cigarettes. Maybe both of them did.
Maybe we should find out which one has the best price on Monster, you know, like Red Bull and that type of stuff. You know,
that's
spicy chips.
Oh yeah, we do stuff. Like our spicy chips.
Yeah, so yeah. Maybe we'll judge after that. Yeah.
So anybody from CVS or Walgreens wants to get a hold of us, just send us an email, thewolfandtheshepherd@gmail.com, because yes, we're still too cheap to go in there and actually create an email address on our actual domain name, because we're just too lazy to do it.
Well, the second shout out I want to give is to the receptionist at your dad's rehab center. Now, this isn't the rehab center for his methamphetamine use. This is actually because he got some hips from China and they broke down after like 6 weeks. So he's,
that is true.
You know, they're trying to teach him how to walk again. So I just want to give a shout out to the receptionist because she listens to us. She said I had a soothing voice, which is nonsense, but I am actually going to draw a picture of myself and sign it and give it to you so you can give it to her the next time you go in there.
Well, but we would like for her to actually continue to listen.
Well, she's going to frame it, put it on the wall. We would do it, send her a framed one, but we're too cheap for that. She's going to have to buy her own frame, possibly from CVS, because I believe they have good prices on 9x7 frames.
Yeah, but I think Walgreens has better prices on 7x9 frames.
Well, I want my long receipt, so Walgreens can suck it.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, so now that we got all that out of the way, we're going to talk about the song Fake Plastic Trees by Radiohead. Great song. Well, first of all, let's back up. Great band. I mean, lots of good songs by Radiohead. But we were sitting here doing our thing, trying to prep for one of our podcast episodes. And we were listening to music in the background. And Fake Plastic Trees came on my playlist, and we said, hey, that's a great song. I mean, both of us said, you know, hey, that's a great song, lots of great lyrics, great band, all that good stuff. So we figured it's been a while since we've talked about a specific song, so we wanted to walk through some of the lyrics from Fake Plastic Trees. So here we go. A green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant in the fake plastic earth. Kind of heavy. I mean, let's stop. I mean, just right there, right out of the gate, they're just basically hitting how fake everything is.
Well, they're creating a fake environment for the rest of the lyrics. Absolutely. So everything is set in a fake landscape.
Yeah, I mean, right out of the gate, they're saying, hey, realize how fake everything is right now. And of course, by the way, did we look up how old this song is? I want to say like early 90s.
It was released in 95.
Okay, mid-90s.
Yeah.
Mid-90s, okay. All right, so we're close there. After that, by the way, trying to stay away from the asides, let me just get through the first part of the lyrics, right? So let me start over. A green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant in the fake plastic earth. She lives with a broken man, a cracked polystyrene man who just crumbles and burns. He used to do surgery on the girls in the 80s, but gravity always wins. She looks like the real thing. She tastes like the real thing. My fake plastic love. But I can't help the feeling, if I could just blow through the ceiling, if I could just turn and run, if I could be who you wanted all the time.
Yeah, now the, I guess, not quite repeated lyrics we did cut out from that was the he wears me out, she wears me out,
she wears me
and
out,
and it wears me out. So those are the three kind of interim, very short choruses in between those lyrics. Now, as we mentioned, it did come out mid-90s, 1995, and it came from the album The Bends. Now, in England, we'd already had two singles released off of The Bends before Fake Plastic Trees came out, but it was actually their flagship single here in the United States from that album. They figured that the style of the music at the time, that Americans more ready for that track, you know, than the two we had released in England, because we still had a very indie, I guess, influenced charts over there. We'd just kind of come out of Britpop and stuff, so indie was still a big thing, whereas over in the United States it had turned more to the kind of pop and pop hip-hop, you know, bubblegum rap type stuff. And so they wanted to bring out something which wasn't necessarily going to be as popular.
Right. And I remember, to be honest with you, the first time that I heard the song was actually from the Clueless soundtrack.
Hmm.
Because it was on the Clueless soundtrack and it was the acoustic version, right? So you only heard the acoustic version of the song. And I think that's when we were doing our, you know, meeting or whatever, that's what you heard. It was the acoustic version, not the electric version.
Now, I don't think we're going to get sponsored by this woman, so I think I can make this comment. Who was the actress in that? Was it Alicia Silverstone?
Alicia Silverstone. Well, that was the main actress.
Yeah.
Alicia Silverstone.
Now, I thought she was actually a good actress because her role, she was very good at playing kind of brain-dead, dumb blondes. But then I think I saw an interview with her and I realized she wasn't really acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a
match made in heaven.
Yeah. The other girl in Clueless, Stacey Dash.
Yeah,
the,
I remember her.
Yeah. She was the Alicia Silverstone's character's best friend or whatever. She's actually a pretty smart
individual.
She looked
like she'd be more of a fun date.
Yeah.
You know?
I always liked her.
Yeah.
But we got to, if you're going to talk about Clueless, you actually have to talk about Paul Rudd. Because in that movie, he looks the same today as he did way back then.
He's gone the Keanu Reeves vampire route of not bothering to age because it's too much effort.
Yeah, there's something going on with him and Keanu.
Nicolas Cage is pretty much the same way as well. Other than when he grows a beard, he looks no different to those, you know, movies he made like early 90s stuff.
Is that why we look so old? Because we grow beards?
No, I think it's because we don't take care of ourselves.
Oh, no, that's probably true.
That's the link, apparently. I've been picking up on the internet that if you don't take care of yourself, you look like crap.
So. Oh, okay. So what you're telling me then is if I just shave my beard off, I'm not going to
make
be
no
any
difference.
More healthier?
No difference whatsoever.
Okay. Because you know it's going to take a lot of work for me to shave.
Well, yeah. What was that stuff we got sent to review?
Oh, from twobeards.club.
That stuff worked. They just didn't send enough of it for you to consistently shave.
Well, I've already ran out. I need to go in and order some more and everything because it kind of made me feel a little bit healthier.
Yeah.
But I found it kind of tasty because I accidentally ate some.
Yeah. Well, you say accidentally. You spread it on some toast.
You weren't supposed to say that.
Well, you tried to get me to try some because you bought it in cold toast with it spread on the toast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, fake plastic trees. Now, the song, like a lot of indie songs, breaks the rules for what should be a successful song. And I know we talked about this when we covered REM's Losing My Religion, but you know, it lasts 4 minutes, 52 seconds, almost 5 minutes, which is too long for a song to be played on the radio because it affects the playlists and the being able to get in as many adverts as they want to. So they try and keep down, you know, to songs around 3 minutes or just after 3 minutes. And this was a time, 95, where you had the most disposable era of pop music possibly in history, where these songs were coming out and being very short. And it was the first rung of the hyper-commercialism ladder. And this song broke, again, the rules for radio play. It was too long.
Well, not only that, but you have those, like you say, the 3 to 3.5 minute songs. Then they finish that song. And when I say they, I'm talking about like the radio DJs, right? They interject their shtick, play a commercial, then play another song. But you got to remember back in the 80s, there were a couple of songs where you knew when the DJ played that song, they had to go to the bathroom. Like November Rain, that was like 8 minutes long. So it was like, okay, DJ has to go to the bathroom. So he's going to go ahead and play that song so he can go ahead and hang the headphones up, run to the bathroom, get to the bathroom, come back 30 seconds before that song ends so he can pick it up and nobody knows the difference.
Yeah.
So 5 minutes doesn't really give you enough time.
Well, it doesn't give you enough time because it takes you about 6 minutes to pee and it takes me about 14 minutes to do a number two. So we'd be ruined.
Yeah,
with it.
That's true.
We need like an overture by like Beethoven or something to really have a satisfactory bathroom break.
Well, I guess that's why we do podcasts, right?
And that's why we're ideal guests for classical radio.
Oh.
Yeah.
We haven't tapped that part.
We haven't yet, but we're coming into it.
Ooh.
I've got great ideas.
Uh-oh.
And the thing is, everybody's dead who can sue us. So, yeah, I'm kind of doing my research for that.
What
for classical music.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you're in charge
and
of all this.
And their offspring are mostly dead as well, so...
Mm-hmm.
And the statute of limitations on the copyright has also run out. So
that's true.
We can maybe even play some of it on the piano or something if either of us could play the piano.
That's actually a good point. I mean, we could play some of that old music because of that copyright statute of limitations and not get in trouble by anybody.
Well, I thought we could put some sound bites in it. You know, the dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun, and then I start howling and you say, get away from those sheep and stuff. Yes, probably a couple of octaves lower than that, but you're on the right track.
Yeah, we'd probably upset people. Oh,
one thing I just remembered, actually. When we did cover Losing My Religion, and I think it was like 7 minutes something or around that, 6 minutes something, almost 7 minutes long, that on that album, I think was the title track, which I opened with, was Radio Song, which actually had a go at DJs about just playing disposable short tracks. And then I can't remember the track order, but Losing My Religion came pretty quickly after that. And so they actually set up that perfectly.
Yeah, so they were kind of punking the DJs there. Yeah, good for them.
Yeah,
that's why we like REM.
Right. Now, the second reason Fake Plastic Trees was a bit, well, breaking the rules as such, was that it's almost devoid of hope when you listen to it. Okay, it's not so much devoid of hope as in there's nothing afterwards. It's just that situation is devoid of hope. Now, they actually made a habit of that. They released a song called Street Spirit, and Tom York, the lead singer of Radiohead, actually said, you know, this song is unusual because there's literally no hope in it from start to finish. And, you know, Karma Police, I think, which was on OK Computer, I'm not sure, on that album,
that sounds
was kind of similar in that it just doesn't, you know, have any hope in it. But, you know, there's company in misery. You know, people will join you in joy for their own convenience, but the true company comes in misery, because those are the people who truly care about you if they're there for you during the miserable times. Everybody can gate crash a party. Nobody really wants to gate crash a funeral, except for the food. I don't know.
Well, it depends on the food at the funeral. I mean, I have been to some funerals where they've had some really good food.
Yeah.
You can get full. It's a lot better than spending $20 at Chili's.
Yeah. You see, we didn't have food at funerals in England. So,
really?
Yeah, you just had to eat something on the way to the funeral.
Oh, that's kind of terrible. You know? So you're eating like fish and chips on the way to the funeral, and then you're kind of sick from that. And then afterwards, you're like, hey, let's go get some curry and make ourselves even more sick, because now we're going to eat some more terrible food.
And one thing which shocked me as well, you know, when I came to Texas, well, even actually when I, you know, was living up in the northeast for a little bit in Connecticut, I was shocked that they bury people during the week, because in England it used to be, I don't know what it's like now, but almost exclusively people would be buried on a Saturday or a Sunday. But I figured out they're allowed to bury people on Tuesdays and stuff, which was a shock to me.
If you look at the fact that maybe you're a grave digger, you're an undertaker, you're a funeral director, whatever, in England, basically, that means you're only working 2 days a week, and then you have 5 days off. So what a great job. Maybe they've got it right over there.
One of the big things, do you remember the video for Fake Plastic Trees at all?
I do not.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, because it's got Tom York and the rest of the band. They're being pushed around a supermarket or grocery store in these big oversized shopping carts. And it's got no relation really to the song, or it's a very hard kind of connection to make. And the director said it was some type of allegory about death and reincarnation. But again, when you listen to the lyrics, you kind of figure that all of these people complaining in this song have an opportunity to get out of this situation, but they have these fake prison bars which they justify not escaping from this situation. And any member of the band during this video could have just stood up and got out of the cart, but it was like they were almost like in a fake imprisonment in this cart, being pushed around, no control over the direction and place they were going in the store. And that connects very much to when you listen to those lyrics, where people do have the opportunity to step out of those situations and escape, but they create excuse after excuse for just staying in that kind of dead-end situation. I made that kind of analogy myself, because I ended up watching the video before we thought about doing this, like about 3 or 4 times in a row, and tried to find some meaningful symbolism.
Yeah, but I totally get that, because you talk about prison, so you got the prison part, right? So the only thing I can picture a grocery store like a prison is just like a casino. I mean, there's no clocks, there's no windows, you do feel trapped, you're trying to figure out your way out of there, and it takes you so long to try to get out of the grocery store, and they park the things that you really need in the back of the store, the milk's in the back of the store, the eggs, the butter, all that, they put it in the back of the store, and then they make you walk past all the stuff you don't really need, and by the way, once you get to the end of the store and you're finally trying to get out, they put all of those other items, candy bars and magazines and everything, to try to get you to just buy a few more things. So it is a prison.
Yeah. There's a fantastic documentary about that, actually, about how they place stuff in stores and make the lines deliberately slow to force you to walk past the candy really slowly so you buy it. Actually, I lied. I just made that up, but I think it would make a great reason for us to go to the store and make a documentary if we took the phone around and just explained kind of, this makes no logical sense to get people in and out of the store quickly. This is to get people to stay twice as long as in the store as they really need to.
That wouldn't be good for us trying to make a documentary because
we'd end up buying everything. Yeah.
Well, not only would we end up buying everything, but we've been struggling of setting up cameras and doing our podcast on video, and we can't even figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
So we're not the guys for that.
Well, we talked about, you know, doing a podcast on UFOs, and we're waiting for our friends who are part of one of the largest UFO research bodies in the United States. But I thought, podcast on that, we're probably going to get abducted if we do any research on it whatsoever. And so it's going to be kind of manifest destiny that...
Sure, but we also don't want them to be in charge of the cameras because every time you see a UFO on a camera, it's like some kind of 1980s
take VHS a video with it. Yeah, you take a video with a potato.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Tom York, you know, when he was talking about fake plastic trees, I think it became more successful than he anticipated. Normally, when you release songs from an album, at least traditionally in England, you'd release the ones which you'd figure would be most popular, which would sell best first, because then it sells the album, or at least did back in those days before iTunes and Google Play and all this stuff, because now you just buy individual singles or you get a, you know, subscription to something like Spotify or iHeartRadio or Pandora, and you don't have to buy a whole album. But then, you know, the initial release of songs was the vehicle for you to be able to shift that album, because if somebody liked two or three songs on that album, the chances of them buying that album was much greater.
Right. And I think part of what you kind of hit on is it was more about all the songs on the record, and you had to have that hook song, right?
Yeah.
You had to have that one song that said, hey, I'm either going to go buy the single, which, you know, back in my day, whenever I was buying CD singles or cassette singles, they were like maybe $2-3, right? But you could get the whole album for like $8 or $9.
Yeah.
So if you thought, hey, I actually like this band, maybe I want to hear more, you'd spend a little bit more money. Nowadays, like you say, it's all streaming, right? So you don't even have to worry about that. You just have to have that commercially marketable material that is out there to get those streams.
Yeah. Well, before I left England and, you know, moved back to the States, there was probably a period, I don't know how long it went on for, where to buy a CD, it was close to the equivalent of maybe between $25 and $30, because it was £15 something, you know, to buy a CD at some point in England. And so you're talking a ton of money for an album which might only have 10 tracks and you really only like two or three of them. But short of going back to that 80s thing of recording off of the radio, you know, it's very difficult. And it was said that, you know, in conspiracy circles, that record companies actually took a loss on CDs for years and years and years to push that medium and get cassettes out of the picture, because people couldn't really record off of the radio onto a CD, and nobody had cassette players anymore. And so, you know, people weren't pirating the music as much until, you know, the ancient god Napster came into play and people started downloading songs, you know, digitally.
Oh, absolutely. I remember when I was, I'm going to say, 7th grade, so I'm about 11, 12 years old when I got my first CD player, and I remember I bought a 5-disc, I didn't buy it, my parents bought it for me because it was birthday present. I got a 5-disc CD changer, and that's the one that I wanted. But obviously, you buy the CD player, the CD changer, you got to have a CD, and I didn't have any CDs. So the CD changer cost $299, and my dad just was befuddled because the CD that I bought, my first CD, was $22. And he said, so you're going to spend $22 for each little disc that you put in here. So you're talking about $100 worth of music that you're actually going to put in here to fill this 5-disc CD changer. And of course, it was shortly after that that CDs kind of came down in price. And I'm sure I still owe Columbia House and BMG Music a lot of money. Because I used to get P.O. boxes, and I would have stuff sent to them because it was cheaper to get a P.O. box and have lots of CDs and everything sent to there. And that's how I got most of my music before the Napster days.
Right. Well, I got into downloading MP3s pretty early on compared to most people. And I was a heavy user of Napster and a couple of other services where you had to click on a lot of stuff, which, you know, automatically bought up about 8 foreground ads. And it took you 30 minutes to, you know, clear all that stuff from your browser. But in comparison, you know, to buying the music, it was more convenient. And a lot of the alternative bands, and I know you have a story on this from one of the bands you follow, that, you know, it was, you know, a great way of promoting bands which wouldn't otherwise get airtime. They were actually grateful for the fact that people were downloading their music and sharing it for free, because it broke into audiences who wouldn't necessarily experiment or go ahead and spend their money on those albums.
Right. I remember when I first saw Flogging Molly, my wife and I, we actually went to a Mighty Mighty Boston show, and Flogging Molly was the opening band. And when we saw them, I said, yeah, I love this music. Went on to Napster, downloaded every track I could find from Flogging Molly, and then I burned a CD. Wrote on the CD, Flogging Molly CD, whatever, you know, so I could see it in my little Case Logic CD holder that I had. And years later, when I met the guys and started hanging out with them, I said, look, I have a confession to make. The first time I saw y'all, I didn't buy any of your music. I actually went on to Napster. I downloaded that, and I burnt copies of that CD, and I gave them to friends and everything. And one of the guys, I won't name him, one of the guys said, that's the best thing you could have done for us to share our music, because we would actually like to gain fans from hearing our music. Because if you're walking through the store and you're trying to find something to listen to, you're not going to spend $15, $20 on something you've never heard. It was better for you to just pass out those free CDs that you were handing to your friends and saying, hey, check these guys out. And then later on, yeah, you buy a t-shirt, you buy a concert ticket or whatever, and you can actually support the music.
Yeah. I mean, that was a stage where bands would actually make more music from the concerts than they ever did from the record sales, because
agents, I think they still do.
Well, agents at that point, they're very much sharkish. And, you know, being on a traditional record label at that time, whether it be EMI or anybody, you know, the record label took so much money that, you know, digital downloads really set bands free, that they could, you know, cut out the middleman. But yeah, the sales of t-shirts and, you know, live albums they produced themselves at concerts, and that was what funded the bands, because they made almost literally no money worth talking about to support 4 or 5 members of a band, you know, just from record sales, unless you were like super huge.
Right. And not only that, but, and not to get too deep into how that music business worked, but they worked on basically a loan where the band would get a certain amount of money to support the tour, and the recoup part was what they were making off the tour to support the record sales and everything. And, you know, a lot of band members, that they ended up being in a bad spot. That's why so many bands end up switching labels and all that stuff. I mean, it's terrible. I guess it's a good thing in our little podcast world that we don't have a label or anything else. I mean, we put all this out for free, right? We don't have to behold to somebody. And yeah, we do have some representation working right now, and we're not trying to make them feel bad because, yeah, please make us some kind of money because we're hungry. But other than that, a lot of guys got screwed, and there are still musicians still getting screwed from that.
Yeah. And especially those ones who sold, who signed into long-term contracts. I mean, there is that thing about, you know, Taylor Swift making the mistake of signing up to a record company, doesn't even own her own music from the earlier albums and stuff. But, you know, I don't really feel sorry for her once she went woke. Anyway, but,
yep.
You know, Thom Yorke, Radiohead, they obviously had a issue in being super popular in the United States because their style of music, you know, came out at a time where, you know, commercialism and poppy songs in the United States was, you know, the mainstream of everything, and radio stations wanted to play those quick little disposable songs. Thom Yorke, when he talked about recording Fake Plastic Trees, he said the song, and I'm quoting this, he said, it was the product of a joke that wasn't really a joke, but a very lonely, drunken evening and, well, a breakdown of sorts. And he said that he wrote down the words and laughed when he was writing them, because I'm assuming he was drunk at the time when he did it from his previous statement, and he thought they were really funny. Yet the first time he went into the studio to record the song, it was just him, the guitar and his vocals. And in that moment of sobriety, they did 3 takes of that song and he actually broke down and cried.
Well, I can totally see that happening. If you look at the lyrics of the song, it's a powerful song. I mean, it's a good sounding song. And if you just want to listen to the melody and kind of hum along or even sing along, still a good song to listen to. But it's a powerful message behind that song. And I understand why he would go in the studio and just, you know, kind of break down with that song. Because, yeah, it's kind of a diatribe or speech against the establishment of what is going on in the music business even that long ago. And now it's translated so far ahead where it's gotten even worse.
Well, I think it gets played on radio stations far more now, like, you know, almost 30 years later than it did back then, because people understand what a classic song it is. And, you know, the guitar part in it, even if you took out the lyrics, you know, the build up and the crescendo of the guitar, and especially when you get the introduction of the orchestral parts, you know, make that song so powerful and so moving. You know, even if the song was sung in a language where you didn't really understand anything, it's still a very, very moving song.
Well, you know, the song's sad. You can hear that in the music. You can hear the music's supposed to be sad. It's not supposed to be happy and upbeat. It's not one of those upbeat songs. It's not, I don't know, choose some kind of upbeat song like the B-52s, right?
Love Shack.
You go.
I didn't get invited to that, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Is there a Love Shack?
Well, I don't know. It's closed down now, apparently, due to COVID, but I didn't get an invite to it back in the day when it was popular anyway, so.
Should we change the name of our studio to the Love Shack?
Well, it doesn't have any relation to what happens in here, so probably not.
Okay. Well,
I'm name it after that movie, The Disappointments Room.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be more apropos.
Yeah. Now, when you mentioned the lyrics in the song, "She looks like the real thing, she tastes like the real thing, my fake plastic love," I was very much reminded of that show we talked about in our Mail Order Brides, the 90 Day Fiance, which I renamed 90 Second Fiance, because it makes me just think of a trophy wife, whether she's there for the money, not for the love, but for all appearances to everybody outside of the relationship, it just looks like it's the most perfect thing. But he can see how entirely artificial, you know, and how this relationship is built, you know, on sand. It's just nothing stable to it, and it's inevitably just gonna blow up.
That's totally true. But, totally true.
But also, again, I was very existential about this because I did all my research at like 3 a.m. in the morning, which is the worst time to do research because that's also statistically the most likely time for you to die 3 a.m. in the morning. You know, the earlier verses where she's saying about being trapped, you know, she lives with a broken man, a cracked polystyrene man who just crumbles and burns. You know, I thought it just sounds like a man or a very fragile ego who, you know, snaps and breaks at everything because he thought that she would bring purpose and completion to his life. But instead, the same problems still exist and he won't stand up for himself or her. Like I said, that might have been me being a little bit too introspective and existential, but you know, that's kind of what I got out of it. And, you know, if we go to the last verse, you know, if I could be who you wanted all the time, that's kind of surrendering yourself for peace. You know, in the old days where people wouldn't get a divorce, they'd put up with domestic violence and unhappiness and stay married for 60 years. And that last verse is like, well, you know, I can't really change myself and not be myself, but if I could just be what you wanted all the time, maybe things would be peaceful, maybe things would be happy.
Well,
but suppressing yourself and being a mold of what the other person wants.
I see that kind of like with my wife, because she probably would like me to be something else, but then she's got to decide what I'm supposed to be, because I got to change that all the time and I get confused. I'm trying to say, well, I'm supposed to be this tough guy. Okay, I'll do that. Oh, now I'm too bad. Now I got to be sensitive. It's all confusing. You know, I can't keep up with that all the time. So if you have to take anything meaningful from this song, it's what lyric?
I think gravity always wins. And it's not just gravity as in pure gravity and relating to the lyric about, you know, the guy doing surgery and the women in the 80s. And it's renowned for being terrible then, you know, women who got boob jobs in the 80s. I think half of them exploded and stuff, or their faces dropped, you know, below their elbows. But yeah, gravity always wins. That you can't cheat the science of anything, the science of compatible relationships, anything. Time does its damage, it erodes, you know, it shapes things, it builds new futures.
Isn't gravity a theory? So does that mean you believe in gravity?
Sometimes.
Just sometimes?
Yeah, well, my disbelief of it sometimes has come back and bitten me in the butt. But no, I don't believe it. It's an absolute, because, you know, I believe our friend Elon Musk that, you know, once you start going into other dimensions and going into space, that gravity is not as, I don't know, reputable as, you know, the old science says.
So obviously we're not talking about the movie with Sandra Bullock, right?
As a decent-ish movie, although I wouldn't have put her on a spacewalk, because I saw her in the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves and I didn't think she was really that qualified to drive a bus going over 50 miles an hour, so I wouldn't have put her in space.
Yeah, but I thought she did a pretty good job. I mean, she jumped that bus over the little gap in the road. But I honestly look at that. That could have been set in Texas now, because we don't finish any roads over here.
That's not true.
Yeah.
Come on.
No, that is true.
We do eventually. I mean, it's only taken like 20 years to move 3/4 of a mile down the 820 loop here. But
exactly.
They've widened the road and now they've actually started re-widening the starting point. So I think by the time that your kids have grandkids, you know, they'll be able to drive down there at 2 a.m. in the morning without it taking 40 minutes to go 3 exits.
Well, I guess that's why you look at stuff so much more positively than I do.
Yeah.
Because I really don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah.
Well, with all that, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. We hope you will actually go and listen to Fake Plastic Trees by Radiohead, because one thing that The Wolf and I have talked about is we would love to be able to play versions of these songs that we talk about, but there's all this copyright stuff that we can't deal with and everything, and honestly, we don't have the money to try to pay for these lawsuits if we tried to play this song. So please, you know, go out and search Fake Plastic Trees if you haven't heard the song Fake Plastic Trees by Radiohead. Listen to the song, shoot us an email, let us know what you think, and by the way, we will catch you on the next one.